This is the Quality News Network. More problems for financial markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed below 1,300 for the first time since April. We'll have the latest numbers coming up in our business segment. The death toll is climbing in Iraq following a series of truck bombings aimed at a Kurdish sect. An American military spokesman said the blasts that killed at least 250 and injured more than 300 were an act of ethnic cleansing by al-Qaeda. America's top military commander said he's ready to recommend troop reductions in Iraq. General David Petraeus warned that he's against a quick military withdrawal, but said the U.S. footprint in Iraq will have to be smaller by next summer. Several major news organizations are reporting the Bush administration says it's preparing to label Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard a global terrorist organization. That designation will allow the government to block the group's assets and essentially cut off the network that funds them. The State Department would not confirm such a plan. The search for six men trapped in a mine collapse in Utah is in its 10th day, and options for rescuers are running out. Mining experts say chances are slim of finding the men alive, but not impossible. Last year in Australia, two men were rescued after 14 days underground when a similar collapse happened. Six Italians with reported mafia ties were shot dead outside a train station in Germany. According to authorities, those killings are part of an ongoing feud. Mattel has now increased its toy recall to 18 million Chinese-made toys. Senator Dick Durbin is leading the call for better regulation overall. He's urging the U.S. to temporarily detain and inspect all shipments of children's products from China. Texas is bracing for Tropical Storm Erin, which will likely make landfall tomorrow morning. Forecasters say heavy rain, 3 to 8 inches in some areas, will likely cause flooding after an already extremely wet summer. Last night, Hurricane Flossie just grazed the Big Island of Hawaii as a Category 2 storm, bringing high waves, rain, and powerful winds. Two co-defendants of Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick will enter their pleas on Friday in the illegal dogfighting case. Their testimony, along with one other defendant who entered a plea, could result in more charges against Vick unless he strikes a plea deal himself before then. You're listening to Quality News Network.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't surf in that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of The Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At The Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Australian scientists say they found a previously undiscovered underwater current uniting the planet's oceans, part of the system controlling the world's climate. The current travels offshore south of Tasmania. A hole in one of the astronaut's gloves forced him to cut his spacewalk outside the International Space Station short today. NASA says he was in no danger as the hole was only in the two upper layers of material, and they have five total layers of fabric on those gloves. NASA is still deciding whether or not to repair a tear in the Shuttle Endeavour's underside. An advisory panel for the Food and Drug Administration will discuss the safety and effectiveness of over-the-counter cough and cold medicines for children. A group of health professionals recently filed a petition expressing concerns for cold medicines that are risky for children. Citrix Systems has agreed to buy privately owned ZenSource for $500 million. The infrastructure software maker says buying ZenSource will allow Citrix to enter and compete in a whole new market area. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $73.33 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. Experts, again, are blaming credit worries for the down market. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 167 points at 12,867. The Nasdaq was down 40. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Oh, Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 23 of Strictly Confidential. I'm host, Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio, and thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and as I've said, there you'll find the links to all of the guests. You'll find links to the chat room, the main head-on radio network site, where you'll find out about all of the other progressive programming on this network. And again, that is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The telephone number, toll-free, to reach me is 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON, or 877-443-2366. Also, if you have a unlimited long-distance calling plan, you can reach at 304-658-3333. Again, if there's a guest you'd like to hear, a guest on Strictly Confidential, drop me a note. I'll do my best to have them on the show. I do listen to you, and you're appreciated. If you haven't stopped by the Strictly Confidential radio site to see the San Diego Gay Pride pictures, you ought to do that. They're very interesting, and as I was saying last night, they're unique in as much as they were not taken to prove a point. They were not taken by the right-wingers to show the most outrageous they could possibly come up with. They have no intention of ever actually being posted publicly, but they were taken by a gay fellow in here and their guests from out of town at the San Francisco Gay Pride. So if you want to see Gay Pride as it really is, stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the San Diego Pride is photographed by one of our listeners. You'll find that next to the calendar. Our guests on Monday, we have the Lesbian Ministry. We played one of those tracks a while back. If you recall, we played When the Roll is Called Up Yonder. Susie Brenner was singing that. It's amazing in as much as it's the most stereotype-busting couple of women I have ever met in my entire life. Imagine a lesbian ministry. We have Susie. She sings and plays guitar, and Linda is the speaker of the two. Linda is a former school teacher. And their wife and wife ministry, they'll be joining us Monday. And what was that I heard on the news? Apparently Vic has lost his contract with Nike. I was going to refer to that. I was actually going to ask you to send in give you an address for sending in and registering a complaint with Nike that he still had his advertising contract. That's important to me, not just because of the fact that the dogs were fighting and what a vicious sport that is. Importantly, because the way he disposed of the dogs when they did not win. And in fact, it very much ties in to some stories we're going to be doing later. We're going to be doing several stories that lead up to this. The main story we're going to do is a story called Masculinity and the War on American Youth. And indeed, it's this huge macho bullying complex that seems to be a huge problem, and I think the way this man was treating his dogs when they did not win was part of that macho you got to be tough BS that is killing so many people, animals too. And so way to go, Nike. I'm glad you dropped the jackass. He did not need to be selling your shoes, and I just wanted to point that out. I also want to tell you too that it's a Friday night, if you're about to head out and go dancing, go out to some clubs, meet some people, have some fun, I recommend you just turn this program off right now. You don't need to be hearing what I'm talking about because it'll just bring you down. You will not be having a good Friday night if you listen to this before you go out, so you just see you later. You can catch it on the replay, but please don't tune into what I have to say this evening. If you're not going out and you're going to stick around the house, by all means, tune in. There's some interesting information coming up. I'll begin by talking about the hate crimes legislation, which will tie into all of this. As you may know, it's on hold. It was tied in with the legislation for the National Defense Authorization Act. The hate crimes legislation was tied in with that because there was a guess that it was more likely to be signed by Bush, who was threatening to veto the hate crimes legislation if, in fact, it was tied to the spending bill for the military. Now, of course, the Republicans filibustered that, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid pulled the defense bill and therefore also pulled the hate crimes legislation with it, and they're saying that it may come up again in September, but for right now that is on the table, and quite rightly. I think that was actually a good move considering what's going on in Iraq. There needed to be some statement to stand up to this bastard we have to call president. And in any case, it is on hold right now. And as I've told you in the past, Washington is completely inundated, at least for a week or so, with the crazies who are fighting the anti-hate crimes legislation. They're fighting it because they fully believe, even though the people who are perpetuating the lie understand it's a lie, they're telling their people, and as it passes down through the hands of their email chains and their bought and paid for ministers, that it will impact their freedom of speech to be able to preach the Bible from the pulpit. The Traditional Values Coalition, the American Family Association, the Concerned Women for America, which is a bunch of Republican hack women, Pam's Houseblood refers to them, and I love this, the professional persecuted Christian. Love it. At last I have a term for them. That's always annoying to me when I hear about the persecuted Christians compared to the other groups in this country. They've also got a group of homophobic and bought and paid for black pastors, and what they're doing is hiding behind them, standing close to them when all the hate speech comes up. They're trying to tie it into the black movement in a way that defers or deflects the criticism from them for being against a hate crimes bill. Of course, it does not impact their freedom of speech whatsoever. Ahead of audio, this is three of the black pastors talking about the hate crimes legislation. Well, let's just go ahead and run that, Agnes, if you would, the one called Matthew Shepard.
Senate Bill 1105 is an attack upon Christianity. If Christians don't wake up and realize what is happening, they will look around one day and realize that they cannot even mention the name of God or disagree with homosexuality. If this bill passes, they will come into our churches. They will grab your sermon notes. They will go after your congregation. If any pastor preaches against the sin of homosexuality, and then a nut in the crowd later goes out and commits a crime, they will accuse the pastor of inciting violence. They will accuse him as a co-defendant and charge him with a hate speech crime for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, for quoting the Bible in the chapel. If this legislation becomes law, deviants will sit in congregations across this nation waiting for a pastor to call their behavior what it is, an abomination. Pastors not only have a right, but they have an obligation to state emphatically that according to Scripture, a man or a woman should not perform a sex act with a person of the same sex.
Amen.
Nor with a dog, nor with a snake, nor with a house or any other creature. We are struggling from the moral rot from within. And secondly, we are in danger of the threat of terror from without. Yes, I dare state that there is a direct connection between the sins and crimes of abortion and the sodomite agenda and the Islamic terrorism that threatens our nation.
Amen. So now it's the sodomite agenda. I have to add another name to my huge background and experience in the gay community and with the homosexual agenda. I can now be keeper of the sodomite agenda. Ronnie Paris, he was a 3-year-old African-American boy He lived with his parents in Tampa, Florida, and he died on January the 28th of 05 due to brain injuries. The injuries stemming from severe abuse at the hands of his father, who thought the child would turn out to be gay, and forced the boy to box with him in an effort to keep him from growing up soft or becoming a sissy. In May 2002, the Florida Department of Children and Family Services removed Ronnie from his home and placed him in protective custody. After he was admitted to the hospital for repeated vomiting, the doctors determined he was undernourished and had a broken arm. On December 14th, 04, 5 days after his third birthday, Ronnie was returned to his parents. On January 22nd, Ronnie slipped into a coma after falling on a couch at a family friend's house where his parents were attending a Bible study. That's right. Daddy beat the hell out of the kid to make him tough, then drug him to a Bible study at a friend's house. When they realized he was unconscious, his parents rushed him to the hospital. Ronnie died 6 days later when he was removed from life support. During the investigation of his death, his mother told detectives that her husband, Ronnie Paris, had repeatedly abused the child, slapping him on the back of the head, slamming him into walls, and forcing the child to participate in, quote, father-son boxing matches until the boy began to shake and cry and wet himself. The father was charged with murder and aggravated child abuse. The mother was charged with child neglect and failing to get medical attention for her son. And in July of 05, Ronnie Paris went on trial for his son's murder. During the trial, his wife testified again that her husband thought that their son might be gay and that he would smack the boy in the back of the head, slam him into walls because he didn't want his son to grow up soft. Her testimony was cooperated by her sister, who said that he was trying to teach him how to fight and told the court he was afraid the child might be gay. A sweet-spirited little boy. A family friend who had a Bible study with the Paris family testified that Ronnie Paris, quote, slap-boxed, end quote, with his son because he didn't want him to be a sissy. Forensic pathologist Dr. Giuliano noted the child's scarred face and bruised head and told the court that the lethargy and vomiting spells in the coma and the eventual death were due to head trauma that was not accidental but deliberately inflicted. The child's foster mother testified that during the 2 years he lived with her, Ronnie never vomited and had a healthy appetite. After 3 hours of deliberation, the jury convicted Harris of second-degree manslaughter and aggravated child abuse, the death of his son, Ronnie Antonio Paris. He was sentenced to 30 years of imprisonment. His wife was later sentenced to 5 years probation for culpable negligence in the death of her son. Steen Frenrich. He was a 19-year-old African-American gay man who lived in Bayside, Queens, New York. In March of 01, his dismembered remains were discovered. Police believed his stepfather, John Frenrich, killed his stepson in a homophobic rage. Steen Frenrich entered the Army in July of 97 and served 9 months discharged. In September of 99, he left his parents' home in Dix Hills and he went missing. Moreover, no one filed a missing persons report on Frenrich. On March 31 of 2000, the remains of Steen Frenrich were found by a man walking through Alley Pond Park in Bayside, Queens. He was in a plastic blue tub. The tub contained a skull that had been burned by acid, a foot with some flesh still on it, other body parts. The remains were identified as those of Steen Frenrich by his Social Security number, which had been written on the skull along with racial and homophobic slurs. Shortly after being told that his stepson's remains had been found, John Frenrich called News 12 in Long Island and suggested a motive. Along with suggesting that his stepson had been killed because he was gay, the station later reported that Steen Frenrich had a contentious relationship with his stepfather. Police said they had not yet told family members that the remains had been dismembered, but John Frenrich knew it and was stating it publicly prior to the police having told him that he had been dismembered, and of course that led the police to believe that he did it. The police report to Newsday said they believed that John Frenrich killed September 9th after an argument stemming from his stepson's desire to move back home after an argument with his partner. Finrich disapproved of his son's homosexuality and was angered by his request to return home. Steen Finrich's partner told police that John Finrich had always treated him with contempt and had called him a few days after the argument to say that Steen was going away for a couple of weeks. On May the 22nd of 2000, after talking to News 12, John Finrich suddenly bolted from the interview with the police in his home, and he climbed on the roof. He started firing guns and begging police to shoot him, that he was, quote, a failure as a father. Not, mind you, because he had killed his stepson, but because he raised a stepson who turned out to be gay. After an eight-hour standoff, John Finrich committed suicide by shooting himself in the head. Masculinity and the war on America's youth. Just when do children begin to learn what's right for a boy and what is right for a girl? There was a study conducted at Brigham Young University that found that children at ages as early as 24 months are aware actions veer away from traditional masculine and feminine behaviors. They found that toddlers in the study were shown videos, and the video monitors contained adults performing standard gender common behavior. For instance, a woman applying nail polish or a man shaving. Okay. The monitors also showed the children, 24 months old, non-traditional behavior, a woman putting on a tie or a man applying lipstick. The children spent far more time watching the non-traditional gender behaviors because apparently they recognized that they were seeing something unfamiliar. The study follows a research from the University of Washington that found that 18-month-olds were five times more hesitant to play with a toy after watching an adult express anger at someone else for playing with it. Researchers are calling children's use of adult cues like this to make choices about toys and about how they play and about their gender identity as emotional eavesdropping. We're finding that there's some large implications here. It causes children to conceal their interests and their talents and to hide behind hairstyles, clothes, behaviors, and they do what is expected of them. The Brigham Young University study does not draw a conclusion or any judgments about the toddlers, but it does say that gender atypical behavior demonstrates that the activities and behaviors of others are an important factor for children's attention, perception, and learning about gender stereotypes from as early as 24 months. I'm pointing these things out because this thing about gender identity is hugely important. It's one of the things that the Matthew Shepard Act, it's not only sexual orientation, but gender identity. Now, we've been talking about that more and more lately. We talked about that with the people from Fierce, and we talked about that with some of our other wonderful guests. But what we're finding out is that masculinity is not such a good thing, kids. Especially when it's enforced at the hands of teenagers. The overview is that in a report done by Ricky Wilchins, and I hope to have her as a guest soon, regarding the gender war in America's youth, there is a huge, huge tide of underreported violence that's claiming of gender nonconforming youth from ages of children all the way up to the age of 30. And law enforcement is indifferent to it. Authorities are indifferent to it. Policymakers and mainstream media could care less. A few of us are realizing just how many young people are dying violently each year because they don't fit someone else's ideal for masculinity and femininity. If federal law mandated that the FBI track gender-based hate crimes, they would outweigh every other category except for race hate crimes. These assaults are violations of basic of human rights, life, liberty, the expression of self, and basic safety. This report aims not only to convey the tragic personal toil behind the data, but to spur decisive action by human rights and other advocacy organizations and the police and the media. You see... The thing is it's gender-based violence. It's not about being gay or straight. It's not about being male or female. It's gender-based in terms of how, well, let's put it like this. Anyone who's ever seen a, quote, sissy boy beaten or a tomboy girl ridiculed and tormented, you're already familiar with hatred toward people who are not gender-conforming. Research is showing that hostility toward gender nonconformity starts early and it is commonplace. And in the research we just read, maybe all the way down to 24 months old. In one recent study, 54% of the youth reported that their school was unsafe for guys who aren't masculine or are not as masculine as other guys, while one quarter, 27%, complained that being bullied themselves for not being masculine or feminine enough is common. And another 61% reported seeing gender nonconformity forming classmates verbally attacked or physically attacked. The report's not about common harassment. It's not about common bullying that's out of control. There's a huge amount of rage involved here toward gender-based nonconformity. It's widespread, and there are fatalities. And it's completely out of the control. It has a lot to do with, it's not random. It is very specific, and it is a very precise target, and it is a very precise hate crime. Most of the victims are biologically male. They are also black and Latino, and they were transgendered, or they were pressing gender boundaries in some profound way. Almost all of them were killed by young males about their own age who assaulted them. And assaulted them in extraordinary ways, often with multiple acts of violence. The deaths are consistent with a pattern of young men using aggression and murder to enforce standards of masculinity and to assert their manhood. Let me say that again. These are young men who are enforcing standards of masculinity and asserting their manhood. They're also doing it with women to enforce femininity. The context of this is that it's a gender culture, and it rewards hyper-masculinity, and it loathes sissies, and it loathes anyone who can... It's a boy code. It uses male aggression to toughen up young boys and enforce femininity in girls. There's an examination of a little more than 10 years has gone into this study, but this data is new, and 10 years is about all the data that we have to look at this point in time. The deaths go underreported and unreported and underpublicized and undersolved because authorities are failing to categorize them as gender-based assaults. They're not even categorizing them as hate crimes. And if they are covered by the... It's a singular event, and it's always according to the identity of the victim, not the gender typing that we've discussed earlier. One of the folks is Sakia Gunn. We talked about her the other night with the Fierce People. There are a number of other people I'm going to go into in reviewing this report and a profile of what the typical victims are like and a profile of what the assailants are normally like, what the mainstream media, the police, and the legislatures are not doing. But I believe at this point we will come up on a break. And listening to Strictly Confidential, toll-free at 877, the number 4, head-on. And I'm your host, Peter Godbole, streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6 foot 7 inch Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
HIV has changed the way people think about sex.
Today's generation really has to be aware about how they go about having sex.
HIV, AIDS is a really scary thing, and it's kind of like holds this generation captive in a sense.
Yes, AIDS scares the crap out of me.
Face the reality of AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases. Talk to your partners, practice safer sex, and get tested.
Anyone can get it, so you just need to be educated and safe.
This message has been brought to you by Redwood AIDS Information Network and Services with support from the Mel and Grace McLean Foundation. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed, I'm your help, I'm your dream, I'm nothing in between.
And as we come back from break, the telephone number is 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877, the number 4, Head On. Or you can use 304-658-3333 if you have a unlimited long-distance calling plan. In Jakarta, Deshira Andrews, 28, an African-American transgender woman, was found shot to death in her car. Her murder is unsolved. In Louisville, Kentucky, Timothy Blair, 22, an African-American cross-dresser, was found shot multiple times while wearing feminine attire. His murder is unsolved. In Indianapolis, Brandy Coleman, an African-American woman, was found in a car with a transgendered friend. Both were bound and shot to death. Their car had been set afire, possibly to destroy evidence. They did find Paul Moore, 20, and convicted him and sentenced him to prison. Sakia Gunn, we've talked about Sakia several times. She was the black African-American, that's redundant, lesbian, who went out with some close friends in 2003. She was dressed like a boy, according to her mother. The friends called themselves aggressives because they embraced a masculine gender presentation. They spent the evening on Christopher Street in New York's Greenwich Village with two other friends, then took the PATH train back to Newark. At about 3 a.m., while waiting for a bus at a bus stop, they were approached by two African-American men in a white car who made suggestive comments. When Gunn stated they were lesbians and they were not interested, the men attacked. She tried to fight, but as she broke free, one of the men lunged at her, stabbing her deeply in the chest. Both men fled. Gunn's friends flagged down a passing car and took her to a nearby hospital. She was bleeding profusely. She died in my arms, her friend said, in the emergency room. There's a lot of similarity among the victims. I have a huge list of victims, but I'm going to read you or tell you and try to summarize the profile. The first similarity is most of them are victims of color. Youth of color account for 91% of the victims for which race is known, with black and Latino victims accounting for the majority, 85%. It suggests there's an intersection of race and gender nonconformity, and it's a crucial thing to understand it in a young person's vulnerability to assault increases. the similarity between all of these victims, the second similarity is that most of them are poor. Poverty and gender are intertwined in many of these fatalities. Victims are disproportionately from economically disadvantaged communities. Stephanie Thomas and Eureka Davis, who had withdrawn from school because of severe bullying and harassment from their peers and teachers, were gunned down by a passing to one block from their home in Washington, D.C., which is the city's second highest poverty rate at the time. Some of the victims have been forced out of schools, out of homes, out of jobs, sometimes all three. They lack money, they lack resources, they lack marketable skills, and some of these people are forced to become temporarily, at least, sex workers for food and shelter, which of course increases their vulnerability. Suggests that a lack of economic and social resources is also important in creating vulnerability for a fatal attack. The third similarity amongst all of these victims is that most of them are transgender gay. 88% of the victims were gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered. 4% of the victims were heterosexual, who did not present their gender in a manner that the enforcers wished them to present it. And about 8% of cases were in that category. And in some cases, the victim's identity is completely unclear because of lack of information. Yeah, but if you peel back the motives and you begin looking at it closely, you're going to see that the victims are targeted not only because of their sexual orientation, but because they did not have expectations of masculinity and femininity. Most of the victims are biologically male, but not presenting in a masculine way. 92% of the victims are biological male, but have a degree of femininity. All of the known assailants were male as well, suggesting a special hatred from young men towards those who display a feminine or a gender transgression in their mind by biological males. And if you combine that with recent studies, up to a quarter of teenage youth report being bullied because they weren't masculine or feminine enough, it suggests that schools, that the violence effort would be less than fully successful until they address hostility towards gender nonconformity. And the similarity five is that most of the victims are ignored by the media. It's difficult to imagine how little the media cares about this as a whole. We have a caller. We have Preston calling us from Denver, and Preston, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hi, Peter. I want to ask you, where are you getting these news stories and this information from?
This particular bit of information comes from the Gender Public Advocacy Coalition, and I hope to have Ricky Wilchins, the executive director, on next week. Ricky would have liked to have been on this evening, but it was impossible for us to coordinate the timing.
Okay.
This is a Washington, D.C. organization.
Okay. Thanks for sharing it, for sure. Do they have a website? Do you know offhand?
Yes. Yes, they do. And it is a series of letters. Here we go. It is gpac.org, GPAC.
Okay.
For Gender Public Advocacy Coalition, GPAC.org.
Great. And actually,
great, by the way.
Okay. I wanted to mention a resource to you that you may have seen it already. I mentioned it to Bob in the earlier show, but I'm the member of this really good progressive film club, and each month they send me a kind of marginalized or independent movie that might slip under the radar screen, along with a couple of short films. And this month they sent a film called Small Town Gay Bar. And I was wondering if...
I'm so glad that you glad you mentioned it on this show. Yes, I did catch that when you mentioned it on Bob's show. All of our listeners between the two shows do not overlap, though. And so a number of our listeners did not hear you mention that. And I'll tell you, the very first thing I did when I heard you say that on Bob's show was to run it through Netflix. And it's in my queue. it's on its way. I'm looking forward to it. It was called Small Town Gay Bar. Maybe you could tell some of our listeners about that, because some of our people did not hear that.
Okay. basically it's about gay communities in the South, places, you know, Mississippi and Tennessee and other places, finding community space for themselves outside of work and home. Some are building gay bars, and they're having, you know, they're getting a chance to dance and hang out and do drag queen shows and stuff like that. And sometimes it causes quite a disruption in the community, you know. I mean, all that information you just shared with us, there's that threat and that harm, and it's devastating. It's heartbreaking. But still, they put it out there, and a lot of them are forming community and finding their strengths and safe places for them to be. And actually, the film also features Fred Phelps, and they give him a lot of time. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's looking as mean-spirited and ridiculous as always. But, you know, his comments placed in the context of the film, it was an interesting how they did it. But anymore, I just feel pity for so many people like that, you know? I actually ran into Fred Phelps myself one time. I went to see a Noam Chomsky lecture at Kansas State University, and they all showed up, and I thought it was a joke at first, but this was several years ago. But, yeah, it was sad to discover that they were kind of serious, or they kind of thought all this stuff. But anyway, I think...
Yes, we do talk about him from time to time. It's pretty deep. That particular well of venom, I think it goes all the way to the Earth's core. I don't see that running out anytime soon. But the whole thing about gay bars and small rural communities, that's really quite... to be quite honest with you, of course, I haven't seen the film yet, but that requires a lot of courage, not only from the people opening the place, but from the people who go. You know, having grown up in the rural South, I could hardly wrap my mind around it when you first mentioned it.
Yeah, and the film is great that way, is that you really get to know some of the people, the clients, and you know, the owners, actually, they talk to the people who own it, and, you know, the effort they put into developing these places and the setbacks, you know. And, you know, some people need to move on to other stuff, but, yeah, they talked about, you know, concerns about, you know, in the past, how, you know, there'd be police, undercover police at these places and writing down names and license plate numbers and then putting it in the paper and, you know, just...
Yes.
But they persevere, and you know, this film just did a beautiful job of capturing it, and the music is wonderful as well. I've never heard of this group. I think it's the Fembots. I don't know.
I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah, they and others did some great music. I also wanted to thank you for bringing up the issue of masculinity and how that's come to be defined in harmful ways. That is so at the core of so much of how we're manipulated into wars, into this constant aggressive stance with other nations and other orientations and other ethnicities and so on and so forth, other species for sure.
Well, absolutely. And it seeped over into religion, too. We've talked about it on various shows on this network, about this macho Christ who carries an AK-47 under his white robe and is ready to waste anybody at... all this Old Testament stuff to the message of Christ, you talk about an abomination. That's it. It's macho positioning, pseudo-political crap is what it boils down to.
It's
mindless.
Are you familiar with the book Real Boys by William Pollack?
I know the name William Pollack, but I don't know that book.
Yeah, it's called Real Boys, Rescuing Our Sons from the Myths of Boyhood. And
wow, that sounds like a great title.
It was interesting. I was introduced to this person by, of all things, a commercial talk radio host on one of the mainstream channels here. A really progressive guy. You may have heard of him, Reggie Rivers. He used to play football for the Denver Broncos. And then almost a decade ago, he got into doing talk radio. And
Sophie Dunn.
Yeah. And
is he a Denver local?
He was Denver local, but it was so frustrating to watch how the right-wingers went after him. Day after day after day after day, it was like a lynch mob developed and just badgered him constantly. And there'd be a few progressive people who'd call in and help him out, but it got to a point where he just stepped away from the microphone. He's like, I can't fight like this all my life. You know, this is harming me. And, yeah, he wrote for the Denver Post for a while after that, but anyway, he kind of drifted away.
He attacked the masculine myth. He attacked the way it's presented. Is that yeah. Is that what reminded you?
Yeah, I mean, he would speak to authors like this William Pollack, and interestingly, Rush Limbaugh very rarely has guests, but that interview that Reggie Rivers did with William Pollack, it undercut so much of the militarist mindset that maybe this was just coincidence, but my feeling is that it wasn't. The next day, Rush Limbaugh interviewed one of these kind of neocon feminist bashers. I forget her name.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I forget her name. I'll have to dig it up, but they go after William Pollack because, you know, they're saying it's the feminization of our boys and all the terrible things, you know. They're learning how to be nurturing instead of assaulting, you know. They're playing that game. But anyway, this Pollack's work is getting out there. And the gay bars are being built in the South. And and the bots keep playing their music. So, I don't know.
I have written down William Pollack's name. I intend to run that through the public library search here and see if I can find something. He probably does exist in the library system here. If not, then I'll definitely look into it in another way because it sounds very interesting.
Okay. Well, great.
Especially if this is part of the... it's not that I'm anti-masculinity. It's just this over-amped Hollywood movie sound blaster, you know...
Yeah.
Bigger than life thing. It's horrifying, and it has no relevance to humanity, and it has no relevance to what it means to be a father, or a loving friend, or a gay man, or anyone else. It's horrible. Talk about Jesus wept. That's it.
Yep. And it it marginalizes so much of our, you know, parts of our real lives, you know. I mean, the ways in which people are serving each other around the world. It's not, you know, we get the impression sometimes that it's a constant battle, you know. And but I think Gandhi actually said something about how, you know, you in the West think history is all warfare and hatred, but if that were true, we would have become extinct long ago. There's a lot more cooperation going on than we realize at times. So,
I agree with you. Anyway. I do agree with you.
But anyway.
Well, you're a wonderful caller. I appreciate for you're stopping by Exponential, and I invite you back anytime.
Yeah.
I don't know much about you because, I quite honestly, when Bob is doing his show, I hear bits and pieces, and I caught what you said about the gay bars in the name of the film, but I did not hear your introduction, so I really don't know anything about you. You may be a famous author, but I just don't know. I'll have to check in with Bob to find out. But anyway, for joining this.
I'm curious, where are you broadcasting from? Are you?
I am broadcasting. No, sir. I am in the heart of the rural South, though. I live about 20 miles outside of Tallahassee, okay. Florida, and I'm equidistant from Tallahassee and the Georgia line. North Florida is very much like South Georgia in both politics and climate, so you could very, very, very accurately define me as living in the rural South because I do. I live in a town that has an intersection and a caution light. Literally.
Okay.
And And I cannot see any neighbors from here. I live kind of in the woods.
Okay. Well, I bet that's very nice at times. I'm
well,
in Denver. I don't know if Bob told you, but I'm in Denver. So.
Well, yes. It's on my. It's on the production chat. Preston in Denver, but
okay.
But I tell you, when I went to Denver, just about, I couldn't breathe there for at least 3 days.
You know, as soon as I moved here, I really had some sinus issues. You know, we do have an issue with ozone smog and the brown cloud, and it's a shame. But I must say, I live kind of right in the heart of Denver, kind of an older neighborhood by the Capitol building, and there's a lot of, it's very pedestrian friendly, and there's a lot of trees, and there's certainly a lot of cars, but a lot of people on bikes and riding skateboards and walking, and so it's very pleasant that way. And, you know, I don't have a lot of nature, but I do have a family of pigeons in the neighborhood, and I get to watch them. It's
cool.
Amazing how they fly around, but, yeah. Anyway, man, I'll be tuning in, and thanks again for your
Thank
show.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Thank
Good
you for calling. Good night, sir. What a nice caller. I'm going to complete a little more of this that I'm going through. What I just covered with you was what the victims have in common, the similarities between victims. I do want to cover with you, before I put this away, the similarity of the assailants. Then we'll leave the rest of this for when we actually have the author on the show. I hope to have her scheduled in next week. The assailants are male. Imagine that. And most attack biologically male peers their own age. Of the 22 murders in this particular study with known assailants, 100% were male, and 92% attacked victims who were biologically male as well. 82% attacked victims within 10 years of their own age, and 59% within 5 years. Assailants were young. About two-thirds were between 17 and 24. And you combine it with the extreme violence of these assaults, and the statistics make the attacks consistent with young men using exaggerated murder techniques to enforce standards of masculinity and insert their own manhood. One of the things, too, they have in common that we mentioned at the end of the last was the extreme violence. Half the victims have multiple stab wounds or bullet wounds in combination with strangling, stabbing, and beating. And this goes on to demonstrate that this far beyond just murder. It's an act of rage, and it's an act of attempted annihilation. It goes way past hate crime. The third of the assailants is that most live in major cities. 64% live in major cities. Is a breakdown of which cities, but they're your standard major cities, Houston, New York, etc., etc. The other similarity is that most of these murders are not investigated as a hate crime. Murders that are classified as a hate crime, by the way, are about 1.5 times more likely to result in apprehension of a suspect than the ones that are not, but these are not. And the similarity number five of the assailants is that most of the assailants go free. About 69% are completely unsolved, and it's partly due to the don't-give-a-damn attitude of law enforcement, the media, etc. When it's identified as a hate crime, the media picks up on it. When it's not, it's just some poor person got whacked, and the media pretty much backpages it. There's a lot more information. There are a lot of victims. And I do mean a lot. I'm looking forward to having her on the show, and hopefully that will be this coming week. See, it's 54. Let's see, I'm counting minutes now to see what I can fit in. I'll tell you what we can fit in. What we can do is go ahead and run something kind of fun, which should take us up to the top of the hour, and then after this runs, we probably can just go straight into the news. If you want to check out the person who wrote this, it's a song. It's Oded Gross, G-R-O-S-S. He has a MySpace page. It's myspace.com, O-D-E-D-G-R-O-S-S. And the song is called It's All Because, and it's a song about why things are going wrong. If you'd run It's All Because, please.
out the door. That's where she went, never to return no more. I wondered why the sanctity that was our marriage had to die. Who knows what for? When she fled, I worried it's because of something that I did. But she left a note that freed me of my worries and it gave me hope. Here's what it said. It's because the gays are getting married, all because of the gays, that everything's gone wrong. Have you ever had those days where you're wondering just why everything about your life is feeling like it's going down a toilet hole? Well, now you know. It's 'cause the gays. She's right, it's obvious now, all the pain I can't explain, that's cause the gays to blame. Like the other night, I was walking down the street just trying to find some food to eat, and then I stopped my toe, all because those gays are getting married, all because of the gays. That
This is the Quality News Network. The death toll is continuing to climb in Iraq following a series of truck bombings aimed at a Kurdish sect. An American military spokesman said the blasts that killed at least 250 and injured more than 300 were an act of ethnic cleansing by al-Qaeda. America's top military commander said he's ready to recommend troop reductions in Iraq. General David Petraeus warned that he's against a quick military withdrawal, but said the U.S. footprint in Iraq will have to be smaller by next summer. The Dow Jones Industrial Average seesawed today around the 13,000 mark. Analysts attribute the instability to announcements about the New York Fed's repurchase plans, crude oil prices, and the possible bad news from the hedge funds and mortgage lenders. We'll have details coming up in our business segment. Figures from the National Association of Realtors show sales of existing homes fell in 41 states during the April-June quarter. The new numbers indicate home sales are the worst they've been in 16 years. Mattel has now increased the toy recall to 18 million Chinese-made products. Baby bibs sold at Toys R Us are also being recalled. Senator Dick Durbin is urging the U.S. to temporarily detain and inspect all shipments of children's products from China that contain paint. Six Italians with reported mafia ties were shot dead outside a train station in Germany. According to authorities, the killings are a continuation of an ongoing feud between rival families within the same crime organization from southern Italy. Officials fear further reprisals. Former NBA referee Tim Donaghy pleaded guilty today to two felony counts of gambling on NBA games he officiated. Donaghy could face a maximum of 25 years in prison. Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick has not made a decision concerning a plea bargain in his federal dogfighting case. If no agreement is in place by the end of this week, Vick could face more serious charges when a grand jury reconvenes. Tropical Storm Aaron is chugging toward Texas. The storm is threatening to cause flooding in the Lone Star State, which has already sustained an extremely wet summer. Last night, Hurricane Flossie grazed the Big Island of Hawaii as a Category 2 storm, generating powerful waves, high winds, and heavy rain. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business, next.
What are you doing?
Fertilizing the lawn. Do you want to help?
No, not really. But didn't you just do that last week?
Yeah, I did. I want the lawn to be really lush and green this year.
Dad, what happens when those sprinklers come on?
We give the grass a good long drink.
That water runs off with the fertilizer in it and gets into the bay, where it can harm the fish.
So what should I do?
Use just the minimum recommended amount. The lawn will be just as green, and you'll be saving our ocean.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hello, I'm CHP Officer Felix Isararas. Law enforcement officers throughout the state are committed to removing drunk drivers from California roadways before they kill or injure themselves, or worse, an innocent victim. Right now, local law enforcement and the CHP are conducting DUI checkpoints to find drunk drivers and keep California roads safe.
Always designate a sober driver. And if you see a drunk driver on the road, call 911. A message from the Office of Traffic Safety and California Highway Patrol.
A hole in one of the astronauts' gloves cut the spacewalk short today while working on the International Space Station. NASA is still deciding whether or not to repair a tear in Endeavour's underside. The FDA says stern safety warnings will be added to the labels of diabetes drugs Avandia and Actos. The drugs have been shown to significantly raise the risk of heart attack. Scientists report sunlight and cool white fluorescent lights may damage human embryos. Both kinds of lights are frequently used in fertility clinics. A study of contagious yawning shows that yawning is based on the capacity for empathy. The behavior apparently plays an evolutionary role in helping groups avoid danger by keeping animals awake and alert. The world's largest food maker, Nestle, posted a better-than-expected profit gain in the first half with an increase of 18%. Macy's, meanwhile, saw second-quarter profits plunge 77% because of a reported merger integration cost. A spokesman for the department store said the challenging economic environment also hurt earnings. And light sweet crude oil is currently trading at $73.49 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is down 170 points at 12,859. The NASDAQ is down 40 points. The S&P 500 is down 21 points. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisen.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And welcome to Hour 2 of Strictly Confidential on a Friday evening. The toll-free telephone number is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877, the number 4, head-on. Or if you have unlimited long distance, please use 304-658-3333. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And in the You're Not Gonna Believe This department, a Florida inmate was convicted of massacre in his own cell. Yes, it's a verdict that could chill lonely inmates everywhere. A jury today convicted a Florida inmate for masturbating in the privacy of his own cell in Fort Lauderdale. The jury deliberated for 45 minutes, and this is in Broward County, and they found Terry Lee Alexander, 20, guilty of indecent exposure for an episode last November. This is indecent exposure, by the way, in his own jail cell. A female guard was monitoring Alexander's cell from a jail control room and spotted Alexander pleasuring himself while seated on his bunk. And at the time, he was in jail for auto theft. And he served 60 days for the indecent exposure, and that was added to his auto theft conviction. And yes, this is true. If you, even a male officer, can walk by your jail cell just to see what's going on, and if they see you pleasuring yourself in your own cell, they can file charges. Just, I don't know what this proves, but I just couldn't believe it. Speaking of Broward County, next week I hope to have, and this is totally unrelated, Kevin Beckner. I hope to have Kevin Beckner, who's running for the Hillsborough County Commission in District. Looking forward to that. He's a fine candidate, and I'm looking forward to having any candidates who are running for office, the UGLBT candidates, anywhere and everywhere. We are for you, and you're welcome to use this show as a platform. And in those crazy lesbians department, lesbian death angels have admitted that they are responsible for Reverend Falwell's death. They do not want it to go. You can't make stuff up. Actually, this is intended to be humor, but it's presented as news. Blew me away. They don't see his death to be a misattributed, to be a misattribute toward some weenie group like Soul Force. Oh, God bless Soul Force. We had Soul Force on, it was Wednesday evening, and the man was delightful. It was Mr. Lutz from Texas. And I don't mean to diminish him, but the lesbian death angels do not want Reverend Falwell's followers to think that it was a weenie group like Soul Force that caused his death. They hexed him. They are saying that they hexed him and that the subject of the hex was Jerry Falwell, and they are claiming full responsibility for Jerry's and wish the world to know that they are proud of it. Well, those lesbians, you just never know what they're going to do next. He earned being hexed, they say, because in his next life, the hexes should carry over into his next life, they're saying, because of his comments on the Pat Robertson 700 Club, and we all know what he said. We won't go into all the details, but I think this must be something that came about after the O'Reilly went into the story about the lesbian gangs. So now those crazy lesbians are saying that it was the lesbian death angels, and they're taking... Oh, you got to keep an eye on those lesbians. You really, really do. Have another caller. We have our dear friend David from Tennessee. Welcome aboard, David.
Well, good evening, Peter.
Good evening to you, sir. I'm so pleased that you called.
Oh, I don't want to say I'm enjoying your show as if I'm having a great time. I find it intensely informing, and I relate well to this whole situation. But before I speak about another chapter and verse of the dark side, regarding that poor fellow in Florida, gracious me, isn't it his? Can't he wash it as vigorously as he likes?
David, that's a bitch, isn't it? That's just a bitch that you can't even... Now, I have heard tell in jails that even if you get under your blanket, if an officer walks by and looks through the cell to see what's going on there, if they see motion in that area of your body, even under a blanket, they can make an issue out of it and perhaps even press charges, but or at least move you to solitary... There's no pleasuring oneself allowed in the jail, sir, especially in Florida.
No pleasure at all. You know, there's something intensely unfair about that.
I know. It seems like a guy could wash it.
But, to just add yet more depth and more unpleasant texture or a deeper sense, you know, your ability to point to the worldwide or to discrimination against gays of all varieties, I'm reminded, and I just heard about this today. It's a worldwide situation, and it's in places that you might not think of. There was a horrific death of a young man in Sacramento, California. He was listed.
I don't know about this. By all means, go ahead. Thank you.
He is listed as a Fijian or someone from Fiji, but likely that means he is of Indian or Pakistani descent, and he migrated, or possibly his family migrated through Fiji from India or somewhere in the subcontinent, and his family settled in Sacramento, California. But also within Sacramento, California, there is another immigrant community, and they are from Belarus or the Ukraine, and they are Russian in their history, and they are intensely, intensely interested in a very, very aggressive form of evangelical Christianity. Their view of the Bible probably centers itself sometime around 1700. And there are 100,000 of these evangelical Ukrainians, and they rail against homosexuality, and they beg for the community to react in a way that Leviticus, or the person that wrote Leviticus, would approve of. And this young man had his life ended in a very unpleasant way, and there is no remorse from the Ukrainian community, and the rest of Sacramento is saying to itself, wait a second, hold on, this is not about us, this is not California, but it is about America.
Yes. Well, this is interesting that you bring this up, but we have done several stories over the last month talking about various gay prides and what's happening in terms of bomb attacks and God knows what else. And there was one story from the Ukraine, and it was particularly vicious. The crowds, the people were beaten, and the police protected the people who were doing the beating of the very few people who were involved in the quote parade. It was just a very small group of people who dared come out. What you're telling me, I wasn't aware of this extreme fundamental vein that was running through the Ukraine.
Well, it's coupled what Pat Robertson would endorse and the old prejudices of the steppes. It's terrible in its consequence, and it's now there are 100,000 people of Ukrainian, Belarus extraction. And a significant portion of them are all attached to these, and it's not Catholic. It's a reborn, in their own words, evangelical Christian movement based on their old beliefs, but American marketing techniques. And they have created their own mega churches. And we just think that Hagee fellow and the rest of them, we just think they're aggressive.
Wow, that's pretty scary stuff. If it's any way related to our evangelical, what are the words? The missionaries that are through there, wouldn't surprise me in the least if some of this didn't get amped up by some of our faithful missionaries that pass through areas like that. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be, but based on how the Orthodox would feel toward those of the Jewish faith. I think they would assign the same vigor toward someone that's gay as they would toward a Jew, and we know where that's going to go.
Good point. Yeah.
You bring these things out, you know, there are many more examples of what you're speaking of, and you're right to educate us and bring it to us and remind us and encourage us to be active.
Well, David, that's what I try to do, and you know, there's so many wonderful organizations had them as guests. For instance, PFLAG is very big on education, and Soul Forces too. We had them as guests also, and this is all I'm able to do. And so, and I've got to tell you, David, Some of these nights I go through some of this stuff, and it's, you know, by the time the first hour ends, it's like, God, I've got to find something happy because I just can't take reading this anymore. it's pretty grim, isn't it?
You're exactly right. Yes, you have to do it, and thank you for doing it. And yes, there is more that you're doing than you realize. It's just like I saw Howard Zinn interviewed the other day by Mr. Mosley, the writer from New Orleans. And I think I called Mr. Zinn's first name right. I hope so. Zinn, the progressive commentator, he appears in the Progressive magazine, and he's a great man, and he's said a lot of things that really mattered. And one thing that he said, and I think it applies to what you're speaking about, and it applies to progressives just like Bob speaks about, it's not necessarily who's in office, it's who's sitting outside the office that really matters. Is it a lobbyist? Is it a preacher? Or is it an activist speaking the truth?
Ah, yes. And rarely is it the activist speaking the truth.
So let's be the active outside the office, no matter who's elected.
Amen, David. Amen.
I'm going to get out of the way and let the real callers hold forth. So thank you again for a wonderful show, Peter.
Thank you, David, and I'm so pleased to hear from you. Please give us another call. And that's our dear friend David, somewhere in Tennessee, and we have our Jim on the line now. Jim is calling from an undisclosed location somewhere on the east coast of the United States. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, Peter. Somewhere between here and east of Echo.
Okay.
Hey.
Somewhere there's a typewriter going in the background, right, writing that novel.
Typewriter's still right now. The key's got too hot.
Okay. We'll trace you for the typewriter sound.
Nah. Now, this the last caller was mentioning some type of sect in the Ukraine. Is this sect part
of the
Russian
extreme fundamentalist? Yes, apparently the fellow in California, Sacramento, was murdered as a result of some folks from that sect who have planted themselves in California is the take I took on it.
Good Lord. I mean, the Russian Orthodox service is one of the most beautiful in the world. And the lit choir and things of that nature, it's kind of hard for me to put all that together in my mind with, for example, the Russian Orthodox Church. It really is.
I see. Well, they may not be part of the Orthodox. You know, it's like in the United States.
That's plenty of
splinters.
Really,
yeah. Yeah, nobody seems to want to stand up for the guy. I'm looking forward to looking at that news article later. I had missed that one.
And you had mentioned something about this young man in prison who was taking matters into his own hands. And
as you put it, and as David put it, washing vigorously.
Well, you know, I worked in a prison for a year when I was waiting to get into civil service. And, good Lord, most of these prisons have a main corridor called a tunnel. That's what it's referred to as. And you can look in the wards and see things that you just wouldn't believe. And the guards can care less. I mean, where I was, this was in South Carolina. And, they had, like, couples and things of that nature and established social order, and they had certain members of the population who were, like, you know, in, I call it, dress tight and high flame, for lack of a better term.
High prison.
High flame is what and low-rise jeans, platform shoes, and midriff exposed, and they wear these things, and all the stuff. I mean, it must have been an unusual place because it blew my mind when I saw some of the stuff that I did, really.
Jim, I think it might have more to do with the fact that that was a jail. I think the county jails are a lot more persnickety about any sort of behavior that they can't control. I know prisons. I've never been to a prison or inside of a prison except once 100 years ago when I went as a group of people went for an AA meeting inside of a prison. It was like an external AA meeting. Went to an AA meeting and it looked pretty grim to me. I mean, everybody was sitting around
they are not meant to be Hilton hotels. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's exactly
true. What do they do in these places? I mean, like in Nuremberg, they used to have rules that the guys who were on trial there had to have both hands above the blanket, and they shined the light in their eyes, and they could not put their hands beneath the blanket. You know, that's
very interesting. I do have a clarification for you on the Lithuanians. Apparently, this group they're referring to are strictly Protestant evangelical American style. So apparently it's just a little bit different than the Orthodox.
I see.
And well, God knows how they got over there, but they're there.
Well, I think you're going to have all types of bizarre behavior that only come from extremist groups, no matter what they are. I mean, in Russia they even had a sect to which Rasputin allegedly belonged, which they had to reach some type of contact with God through sexual activity and purification and orgies and stuff of that nature. So they've sort of gone from one end of the spectrum to the other, huh?
Apparently so, Jim. The reports that I did on the gay pride over there, it was horrifying. I went through so many different gay prides, and it was pretty rough in Israel. There was a Molotov cocktails there, and several people already, they had the bombs already, the cocktails ready to throw. And the Ukraine, those were the two that stand out in my mind as being the two roughest, Israel and the Ukraine.
You mean like the gay pride march in Kiev?
Yeah. It wasn't much of one, though. It was just a few of the bravest, and you know. But there was a set time, permits, too. But permits or not, the police enforced the crowds who were beaten up on them.
Well, I know in the Russian Federated Republic, that type of thing, I guess homosexuality is against the law over there. It still is.
Yeah,
It is an indictable offense.
And was just about around the world until probably the 50s. I think even in England, people were going to prison for it in the 50s.
Yeah, they were. One more thing. You know, some of the movies you've been talking about, the one about the bars in the South.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. What a hoot.
I know you don't like TV and stuff like that, but, you know, if you get on cable, there's a Logo channel that's sponsored by CBS, and they have all these movies there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they do.
Really?
You don't have to see Netflix.
Well, you know, I did give up TV. I just couldn't take it anymore, but I became a Netflix junkie, so I constantly watch movies, or at least when I can fit them in. But that's interesting. No, the Logo channel carries music, or rather, movies along those lines. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, they do. They have concerts, all types of things. They have some very good cinema on that channel. And everything from Longtime Companions through Early Frost, and just movies that deal very, very well with the subject matter in a very unoffensive way. And they have news commentators and things of that nature who are openly, gay and things of that nature. So, I mean, you don't have to go to Netflix to see these things. You might want to reverse your stance on cable TV.
I'm not sure if I can.
Why?
I'm such a habitual old thing. You know, once you get in your 50s, you get set in your ways and crotchety and evil, and you just don't, you just, you know, I don't know, Jim. I'm just kind of a funny old guy.
You're being a little severe, I think, but that's okay. But anyway, I thought it was interesting, and you said the lesbians are supposed to have put the mojo on Reverend Falwell.
They did. Bless their little lesbian hearts. It's the Lesbian Death Angels. Now, this was written by a woman named Marla Stevens, and it was written as tongue-in-cheek. But I absolutely loved it because I did not realize it was tongue-in-cheek until I got all the way through it. I thought it was another you know, Fox News special now claiming that lesbian death angels were another gang. So I'm reading this thing going, oh, my God. Until I finally got to the point that I realized it was at the last line there, the lesbians are thanking the goddess for her swift response.
Well,
indeed, in off Falwell, yeah.
Really? Oh, dear. Well, excuse me if I appear somewhat incredulous, but that is remarkable. I don't know what to say to that other than, I can end my conversation with the Tallulah Bankhead story if you want to hear that. One of Tallulah's famous quotes.
Why not, Jim? Let's have it.
You know, and I just remembered this. I meant to tell you the other night. Sometimes, you know, she was quite immodest. I mean, that was the story of her life, was her immodesty. And sometimes she would just be completely stark and be all together sitting on the toilet and she would talk to people. And she would just say, oh, darling, just look at my eyes because my ass is like an accordion.
Oh, jeez. I've got to buff up on some of her old movies. I clearly recall Lifeboat, but she was in several others that I don't recall as well.
Yeah, she was even on the what was that? Batman. She was the Wicked Queen or something like that. Yeah, she was on.
You're kidding, really?
No, I'm not. One of my favorite quotes of hers, and I'm going to let you go, is he said that only good girls keep diaries. We bad girls just don't have the time.
Amen.
And on that note, I'm going to disappear into the ether. Okay?
Okay, Jim. Thank you so much for calling.
Nice. Good weekend, all right?
Thank you. Good evening to you, sir. That's caller Jim. You never know exactly what you're going to get. It's like, Jim is like a box of chocolates. Never know what you're going to get. I wanted to tell you about this. It's an interesting story. We have a professor, Julie Nimkek, and she's been fired from a Michigan university for failing biblical principles, and also failing to be a model Christian by transitioning on the job. She is transgendered. And she holds a PhD in education, and she's also a conservative evangelical. She was the associate dean of Spring Arbor School of Adult Studies. And the people who are attempting to assist her, Gender Pack, a workplace advocate, are saying, we're unfamiliar with any scriptural authority that addresses changing genders. Nonetheless, they pushed her off and told her she could only handle online courses. I don't know how you do that. I guess you grade them when they come back. But they're terminating her contract, and Spring Arbor University is one of thousands in the country that does not ban discrimination based on gender identity and expression, and its employees or its students. However, they apparently particularly do not appreciate your changing gender while on the job. Gender identity, of course, refers to a person's sense of being male or female, while gender expression describes how people manifest feelings of masculine or feminine behavior, how they look, act, or dress. So, was it interesting? You just never know what's going to happen next with the those crazy transgendered folks. And in Fort Lauderdale, God bless them, the hotel and the tourist industry and the beach, the whole beach area, the restaurants, you name it, the taxi cab companies, everybody is in a huge uproar because of the backlash from the LGBT community, who Fort Lauderdale's a big deal, you know, regarding the mayor nodule. And apparently travelers from the gay community accounted for 11% of Broward County's $8.5 billion tourism. And over the past month, nodule has infuriated gay folks with his robo-toilets, and we've discussed several of those things. I think nodule is on his way out the door. You can stand and argue like a fool when it comes to fundamentalist stuff, beating people up. But when you start losing money, and apparently the county's already a little bit strapped and cutting back funding on various things, but when you start losing a part of an $8.5 billion tourism industry in the happiest state in the country, right next to Disney World, you get in big trouble. So I think Nagel is on his way out the door, and he can take his rolls of toilet paper with him. And as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential, toll-free, 877, the number 4, head-on, and I'm your host, Peter Godbold, streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K, and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from Fierce, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Christian Fellowship here has been a place for our community, a space where we could all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
To become a member of Fierce and help keep our Christopher Pierce safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
And welcome back to Strictly Confidential. I had the pleasure of listening to almost three-quarters of Billy Shear's show. I was not able to catch it live. I had to catch it on a download. That particular evening was Tree in the Front Yard Day, and fortunately I couldn't catch it live. But I have got to tell you, that is some of the best audio I have ever heard. It's masterful. It's so well blended. It's intelligent. It's informative. Billy Shears is really amazing. He really is amazing. And I strongly encourage you to listen to it live at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Head On Radio Network. The chat room is also open during Billy Shears' show. Billy Shears, of course, is our musical guru, and you know, I don't call him the world's most fabulous straight guy for nothing. He is something else. I gotta tell you, that Billy Shears, he's got it going on. I want to tell you a little story. Do you remember when we're talking about Kathmandu and the organization called it was a Blue Diamond Society. It was funded by Elton John's AIDS Support Foundation, and the government of Kathmandu told them to, quote, go find something better to do, because they insisted that there were no HIV positive folks in Kathmandu. There were no MSMs, men sleeping with men, or MSWs, men sleeping with W communities here. I don't know how they think there's no men sleeping with women community. I don't exactly know how they think they got there, but I think what they mean is no men sleeping with women who have HIV is what they're trying to say, or no transgendered. They say it's absolutely unnecessary, blah, 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 blah. Well, there's a news story in from Kathmandu, and I'm going to try to tell you about it. It's a little bit complicated because I think the thing is you know, how can I put it? Wasn't originally in our language. Sort of like reading the instruction guide for a new CD player, you know, and it's from another language, and it almost makes sense, but it doesn't quite. But the point that you will quickly get: the police in Kathmandu are accused of assault on transgendered and gay people in a park after they were discovered that the folks were carrying condoms. The police are said to have beaten them, stripped them, and in some cases even sexually abused the five people. The police officers thought to be responsible for the attack acknowledged to the Blue Diamond Society that such beatings are regular police practice, and the officer added that carrying the condoms is evidence of illegal activity. You do not want to be over in Kathmandu. There were five in the park, and they had joined two other people in the makes five. There are seven people in a park in the heart of Kathmandu. It was around 8:30 in the evening. They saw three police officers approaching, and they knew there was a problem because the police regularly intimidate and beat GLBT folks there, and they were trying to leave, but they were ordered by the police to stop immediately or they'd be shot. One of them did manage to escape. The police started to randomly beat and kick the remaining four with their batons. They were also slapped and punched in the stomach. The police searched their pockets, and they found 200 rupees and then began accusing them of prostitution, calling them whatever the Kathmandu equivalent is of MF. You make this money by anal sex and prostitution, the officer was reported to have said. I doubt he said just that. This is why I'm thinking translation here. One of the GLBT folks told the police that she had a heart problem and begged them not to beat her harshly. The police relented slightly for a moment, but then let out doing it again. Then the police told the five individuals to take their clothes off so the office could check for signs of sexual intercourse and demanded that they pull back their foreskins to check for sperm, their mobile phones to light for light sources in the early evening. They searched their bags, and when they found the unused condoms, they went nuts. They beat the hell out of them for carrying condoms and say they were practicing unnatural and illegal sexual behavior. And one of them managed to walk out of the park saying she would find the friend who had run away, and she saw a fellow named Alex. Now, Alex is an HIV-AIDS worker for the Blue Diamond Society, and told him what was going on in the park. Well, the officers from the nearby police station accompanied them back to the park, but instead of assisting, they just watched. They just stood there and watched. The officers continued to beat them. They rummaged through their bags and kicked them more when they found more condoms in a pocket. They were verbally abused and accused of practicing illegal and immoral behavior. The police that were called in didn't react at all. They just sat as silent spectators. Then they decided they were not going to beat any more of them there. They were going to take them to the police station to beat them. And the police officers told them not to misbehave and to go with them. So they were taken in a van to the police station, but when they got to the police station, they made them run in different directions. I get the hell out of here or we'll shoot you. And so then the Alex, the HIV worker, they tried to file a complaint Wouldn't let them file a complaint because you needed a, quote, 5-rupee stamp. Police are claiming that illegal and immoral behavior goes on in the park. The police have to control this with beatings, and the condoms are part of it. And, well, bottom line is the Blue Diamond Society is horrified. This is the attitude in Kathmandu regarding condoms. The HIV crisis there is getting a little bit out of hand, shall we say. And but they're denying that HIV or transgendered or homosexual folks exist there. There is no evidence at all. They were allowed to file a complaint, but there's no evidence at all that it's being investigated. It's just the sort of thing that's just going to drop. So that's what's going on in Kathmandu these days. I'm not going to run the dance track tonight. I'm going to run something very different. And I may lose my gay license for doing this because it's not. I do actually have a request for a dance track, but we'll get to it a different night. This is very special. It's a song that was actually written by Bob Dylan. And this particular track is being done by Buddy Miller, and it's on his CD called Universal House of Prayer. The name of the track is With God on Your Side, and I want to run this track because it's about the war, and it's about so many of the things that are so screwed up in this country when people think that God is on their side. I think you'll really enjoy this. It is a beautiful song, and it's on the CD, Universal United House of Prayer, With God on Your Side.
Done.
Amazing track. The line about the Judas Iscariot have God on his side always gives me chills. Amazing track. So Universal United House of Prayer. There's not a single on that CD that isn't fabulous. And speaking of fabulous, we have the world's most fabulous L word on the phone with us. Welcome, Kate from Arizona. Ah, apparently we've lost her. Kate often calls in on a cell line, and she's also constantly being hit by a sandstorm or approaching cactuses or cacti, and I'll tell you, I thought I had it rough. I helped Kate out in the woods there. She lost some of the bars in her cell phone. I wanted to mention this to you. We had a wonderful guest from Soul Force on the other evening. It was Wednesday evening, and we were talking about a booklet that was done by their webmaster about the Southern Baptist side-by-side comparison with Fred Phelps. Now, the quote here is from the Southern Baptist Church. It reads, "Southern Baptists ought to take it as a badge of honor that he," meaning Fred Phelps, "would boycott us. The gay and lesbian community needs to realize the difference in attitude and ministry between Southern Baptists like Mr. Phelps." This is the president of the Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas. But is that true? Let's do a little side-by-side comparison on what Fred Phelps says and what the Southern Baptists say. Is it really that different? Fred Phelps says, "You can't make that Bible subject any different than it has always been. It's a monstrous sin against God. It will destroy people, destroy their lives, damn their souls, doom the nation. Any nation that tolerates it has a short time to go before it falls." The Southern Baptists say, "The Bible clearly teaches homosexual behavior is an abomination and shameful before God. our guest was absolutely right, in as much as churches just hide it better than Phelps, Fred Phelps. This goes on for several quotes. But we got Kate back, and Kate, I'm so glad you got some your cell bars on your phone. Welcome to the show.
It's the landline. It's not the cell phone. I don't even have an IS.
Ah.
Lord have
the landline.
I need a
Are you having...
Huh? Go ahead.
Are you having a storm there?
No, it's all passed. No, whatever. Anyway, I don't know. We're on streaming radio here, and I'm just jumping into the stream. I don't have a clue what you're talking about tonight. But and I thought Bob took me off of the air because off of the line because he thought I would have a response to that song because all I could hear was the last line that if God's on our side, he'll stop the next war. Give me a break.
Yes. Yeah.
That was Dylan, right?
Dylan wrote the song, yes, and it was being done by a CD called Universal House of Prayer, Buddy Miller.
Oh.
And the song makes many comparisons to all these people who claim they have God on their side and then pretty much ruin everything.
Yeah, I was, you know, I'm so tired of, you know, my God can kick your God's ass, and if God's going to stop the next war, God didn't start the war, God ain't going to stop the war, and I was listening to Mike Malloy, and I had to shut that off, I'm just going to go play solitaire or something, damn. did your storm blow over? Are you okay? It's okay down there?
Yes, I am fine. It was looking pretty grim for a while. We had some pretty big thunder boomers going on, but I was never in a severe weather alert. Now, I'll tell you, West Virginia, on the other hand, they had horses blowing over fences and landing in the backyard, and Agnes had to ride one out, and the police came to find the horses. It was just, and all this while Bob's trying to do a show. Dear Lord. So I'm going, well, hell, I want horses, too. If Bob could have horses on his, I want horses. I'm not going on the air until I get a horse.
Well, I'll get a man right on it, honey. Don't worry about it. God. I luckily got to listen to the replay last night, and the Rev Willie somebody in DC, and I had lost my internet that night when that thing was playing, and I got to hear the last hour all the way through. Holy cow, that man was nuts. I mean, it sounded like good. You remember who I'm talking about. You kept calling him Willie Nelson.
Yeah. And it wasn't. It was. Yeah, I did. I remember that night. It was Willie. Lord. You know how old I am and how patterned I am.
Stop it. Yes.
Thank
you. We get so good. The older we get, I want you to shut up. Yeah. Anyway, that just stuck in my head all day long, and I was working out today, and I started out with our sweet Jimmy Buffett, and I had Fred Phelps and this Reverend Willie blah blah. Those people kept going through my head, and finally I just had to pop in Maniac, and I had to pound through the last part of my workout, just, you know, full stride, far as fast as I could go to Maniac, because I had a revelation during none of Jimmy's music, not none of it, but most of Jimmy Buffett's music doesn't have gender in it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, this calls for a whole new study of Jimmy Buffett music I think.
I'm not going to out anybody or spread rumors that I can't. But anyway, his music is very, very, very beautiful. And too, not only the first two people he married, it was very beautiful, and I didn't realize that till today that I got to listen to his song. You know, it doesn't have gender in it. He's not necessarily singing to girls, and so all those creeps out there who, well, you know, I just wanted to share my awareness. Anyway, it caused me to go to my computer and do some writing because I just have a lot to say to some of the creeps that are out there who are hassling us and being obnoxious and pains in the butt, and they can kill us, but my best line in the whole writing was that what you're doing to us only makes us stronger, and just like Margaritaville, Brokeback Mountain is a very sacred place, and you can't.
Very interesting point.
Hmm.
Very interesting point. You're making some good points. I hadn't tied those things together, but
right.
This
well,
is
a
very good point.
Well, Margaritaville is vague and ambiguous, and it's all in your mind. So is Brokeback Mountain. Anyway.
You know, I was going to tell you about Brokeback Mountain. You know, that before I saw the movie, I read the book, and you know, it's actually a short story, and it's a paperback. It's only 50 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
Right, I read through that, 49 pages, I think. I read through that, and I wept profusely.
Oh,
I was just destroyed by the.
Yeah.
Oh, my stars. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit better prepared when I actually saw the movie, mm-hmm. but so touching.
Oh, yeah, it's so good. And whoever produced it, whoever did the props and everything, I mean, they were exquisite. The salt and pepper shakers matched the year of the Chevy pickup, and I could smell the upholstery in that old 56, I mean...